Your stories from your city every day.
Drive.
ABC Radio Perth.
What should be the age of criminal responsibility for kids? It's 10 at the moment. Should it be 14? There is a significant argument that the answer is yes. And a group called Social Reinvestment WA, an Aboriginal-led coalition of 25 not-for-profits, launched the Raise the Age campaign. Judge Dennis Reynolds, former president of the Children's Court. Dennis, good afternoon to you.
Thank you, Jeff, and welcome to the listeners.
Tell me about launch of the Raise the Age campaign.
It was very rewarding to see so many people from the public there and showing interest in what I think is a very important issue. The change in the age is something that's very essential, and I think it'll be the catalyst for a paradigm shift, if adopted, in the way that we treat young people in our community.
Okay. Well, we've set that up as a very important piece of decision-making. You presided over so many cases for so many years. You learned so much about the circumstances of the kids before you, and you had to, of course, dispense justice and punishment. Why do you think we've got to raise the age of criminal responsibility?
I think it's very important, Jeff, to understand the cohort of young children that find themselves in the justice system and before the court. The children themselves are victims in the extreme. They suffer from coming from family breakdown, exposure to extreme domestic violence, having to deal with unresolved grief, family members dying, sometimes murdered, severe neglect, abandonment, abuse, and sometimes sexual abuse. And many of them are neurological damaged or they have deficits. The Telethon Institute did some excellent research back in 2018, which showed that 36% plus of young children in Bankshire and 89% plus were neurologically damaged in some way, 36% plus with FASD and 89% with at least one neurodevelopmental impairment of a severe category. So it shows that the young people we're dealing with are extremely damaged and vulnerable young children from very difficult circumstances.
And you saw that again and again and again?
Repeatedly. I think probably to a young person. It's a question of degree, but looking at young people in the courtroom and having to read a whole lot of material and get into their life to understand their behaviour, it's clear that almost to a person, they lack any sense of self-identity, self-esteem. They've got no sense of belonging. The vast majority of these young children are Aboriginal children. And so those children, and particularly Duan last night in the movie, you could see that as a young person, he's lost between two worlds, lost between the non-Aboriginal world and lost in the Aboriginal world, and not really sure who he is and where he is and of his circumstances. And that really portrays the circumstances for most of these young people before the children's court.
And let's move away from that just for a moment to consider, what have you learned about 10-year-olds as criminals, their motivations for committing crimes or their understanding of consequence anyway?
They have no motivation to commit crime, and they have no concept of consequences. One of the things that became clear to me very early is that the concept of deterrence, which plays a great part in sentencing adults on the basis that someone does something that's against the law, there's a sanction, they feel a sense of deterrence, I better not do that again because there's a consequence. In the case of these young children, particularly 10, 11-year-olds and 12 and 13-year-olds, but more so obviously for the 10 and 11-year-olds, there's no sense of consequence. These young children behave very impulsively. They've got underlying disorders as to why they do and don't exercise good judgment in not doing the sorts of things that they do. And often these sort of children, as is portrayed last night in the movie, young Duan, and I should add that as tragic as his circumstances were, I've seen lots of children whose circumstances are far worse than that.
I don't doubt it, and that's why your opinion here and your expertise matters so much. Judge Dennis Reynolds, my guest, former president of the Children's Court here in WA for some 14 years. And last night he was at the launch of the Raise the Age in WA campaign, calling on the state government to lift the age of criminal responsibility from 10 to something else. We'll get on to what is deemed an appropriate age in just a moment. We have had quite regularly and recently the psychologist Dr. Tracy Westerman on this program talked to me on this program before how we have really normalised the concept of incarceration and almost like an incredibly negative rite of passage for many primarily Indigenous kids. And Dennis, how many of those kids broadly left your court only to appear in an adult court a few years later?
Well, probably somewhere in the order of 60% going by statistics. Which is a recidivism rate that's far too high. As best I could do, and as best as the system could do, it shows that there's a lot of work to be done and paradigm shifts need to be made to improve that figure, which is way too high.
When I began this interview, I said I wanted to speak to you countless times over the years in your capacity because we would hear of a case in the Children's Court, and obviously you weren't available, nor was it appropriate for you to comment on individual cases. But I've often wondered what it was like, as you said earlier, to sit 4 metres away from a 10-year-old kid in front of you. And whilst you are hearing the evidence of the case, whilst you know the law as it has to be applied, the limitations of an emotional response from you, can you describe for me what it was like to see so many young kids coming before you, and as you say, you would build an understanding of their background, which was often quite hopeless. And by hopeless, I mean without hope.
Well, just on that last point, one of the problems for these young people, Jeff, is that they have a sense of hopelessness, and consistent with that, they have no concept of hoping. They have nothing to hope for. They can't see anything. So there's absolute despair, and that's a tragedy to see in a young person. Sitting very close to these young people, my view as a judge is that the first thing I need to do is to connect with that young person and to ensure that that young person understands that I care about his or her situation. Unless there's that understanding of the young person that I care, then there's no possibility that I'll connect. So I need to know as much about the young person. I read as much as I can about his or her circumstances. And invariably, the circumstances, in terms of mitigation from a legal point of view, where sentencing, for example, you're having regard to the circumstances of the young person in combination with the circumstances of the offence, putting all of those circumstances together and arriving at a single decision, that is the sentence. In the case of these children, that was very difficult, particularly for the older children. The president would deal with cases, murder, serious aggravated armed robberies, sexual offences. So the nature of the offences and the circumstances, particularly for the older cohort, were extremely serious. But on the other side of the ledger, but to be married in with all of those circumstances of the offence, were those circumstances that I've mentioned. They've come from broken families, from serious domestic abuse, deaths in the family. They've been homeless, having to go into homes just to get food out of the fridge. They have a sense of hopelessness. So you've got these extreme mitigating circumstances, and trying to marry these together and arrive at a single decision was a challenge. And it was also mindful to me that I needed to do it in accordance with the law and at the same time have the confidence of the community that the court was doing its job. So it was a very difficult task. One can't take emotion into these sorts of decisions, otherwise you don't survive as a judge from day to day and from decision to decision. So you need to look at all of those circumstances, the personal circumstances that I spoke about, that carry with them, by their very nature, empathy, compassion, those sorts of things. You take those into account, but as factors. So in the end, in order to survive and to arrive at objectively the right decision according to law, you're engaging in a clinical analysis of factors, and that's how you survive.
Dennis Reynolds, the former president of the Children's Court, is my guest. Okay. You said at the start of this interview that if we change the age of criminal responsibility from 10 to something more appropriate, we could see a paradigm shift. What is the right age?
The right age is 14. That's the United Nations standard, and it's adopted by many countries around the world. Indeed, some countries have an age higher than that. The reason for that is that I think whilst it's a justice issue primarily, so far as many people are concerned, it's really a human rights issue. It's an issue to do with neuroscience. We engage the empirical evidence and opinions of medical people during COVID, and that's quite appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of youth justice, I think what we need to do also is to have regard to neuroscience and evidence-based research to make our decisions. So, yes, there is a role for justice, but justice really doesn't get involved until a young person is 10, as it stands at the moment. And by the time the young person's 10, we've had all of those personal circumstances, those issues that I've spoken about, they've all happened. So if we take this damaged young person and then put him or her into a justice system, which involves initially, say, an arrest, if there's no responsible adult or supervised bail, they go to Bankshear Hill, for example, or in regional WA, they may stay in a police lockup. So we're taking damaged children, and that sort of experience in that custodial setting is very damaging for a whole range of reasons, particularly to very young children, and that's something that we need to change.
So when we lift the age of criminal responsibility of 14, there's a broader acceptance that a 14-year-old has some understanding of the crime that they've committed, but also you think there's an opportunity for the community to make sure that the community is in there assisting the 10-year-old kid before they go down a path of criminality and find their way into a youth justice system.
Yep. The first thing to say about that, Jeff, is that broad understanding may be for functional, say, 14, 15-year-olds who have all the supports, their life doesn't have layers of crises. But for the sort of cohort of children that appear before the Children's Court, that broad understanding is actually not correct. And it wouldn't take long by giving examples to convince people, if they think otherwise, that the sort of children we're talking about, this particular cohort, don't fit that description. The children that I'm talking about have no concept of consequences. I've mentioned before about the neurological damage or deficits.
Yes.
They're not able to exercise executive functioning. Now, they may, some of them, have a general sense of what's right and wrong, but put them in a set of circumstances where they have to make a decision on the spur of the moment or within a very short time frame, they're not capable of making the right decisions.
I understand that there will be always arguments over what is the appropriate age. The police commissioner, to my memory, comparatively recently said, the first step for us would probably be lifting the age of responsibility to 12. Will there be much argument about this, or can this be done in stages to get to a fairer, better setting?
I was interested to hear and read what the commissioner said, and it's good to see. I've got a great amount of time for the commissioner, and I think he brings to this topic a great amount of goodwill. And I think the police and how they respond to it is particularly important, because the police are the only 24/7 agency of government. So they're right at the forefront. They're the ones who have to go and deal with these young children.
Indeed.
Where do we take them? What do we do with them? So they're the first point of entry into the system. So to have that from the commissioner, I think, is excellent.
But there needs to be the community service support to underpin the police in this situation too.
I think the reason why the commissioner is right is because there are actually two sides to this, Jeff. There's the easy side, in a sense, and that's changing the numbers in legislation,
right?
Whether it be from 10 to 12 or 14. Now, changing legislation in that numerical way is an easy thing. But if you do that, then you leave the vacuum. Well, what are you going to do with these young children that are so damaged and enter into the justice system? Indeed, what are you going to do to the young children who have all of those disadvantages and don't enter into the justice system? Because we can't forget those children either. So there's two parts to it. And the difficult part is that second part. How do we fill the void? And that's where there needs to be time given to make the necessary structural arrangements within government and outside of government so that the necessary programs and services are put in place to support these young people that would otherwise enter into the justice system. And indeed, what I'm talking about is not just services and programs for 10 to 14-year-olds, but for services for, we go back prenatal. And then when children are born, the first 1,000 days of a child's life are particularly important so far as neurodevelopment. And we don't want young people from the time of birth to, say, 1,000 days subjected to extreme domestic violence. All of those things impact on the brain development. And so we need to be coming up with the services and programs that are going to fill the void.
Last question, Dennis Reynolds. If this becomes law, how should we measure success, if success is the right word? What do we achieve here?
Well, I think essentially success can't be measured in the short term.
No.
What we're talking about is making a key decision that will have generational change. And when I talk about generational change, I'm talking about 15, 30 years from now. We'll look at the decision we make now and see that there has been significant change. The sort of things that we'll be looking for, longevity of life, particularly for Aboriginal children into adulthood, quality of life, and they're the sorts of things we'll be looking at. It's interesting to note that of that 10, 11-year-old cohort, in 2020, only 11 children fitting that description went into Bankshire Hill, only 11. Mm. Now, of those 11, none of them received a custodial sentence. So I'm on side with the Commissioner. I think we do this in stages to 12. We de-risk it, then put in place all of those necessary services and programs, and then after 2 years from then, we increase it to 14 after we've de-risked it and we've got the community with us confident that what we're doing is not making them any less safe.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a really important point. Thank you for your explanation and your expertise this afternoon.
Thank you, Jeff.
Your stories from your city every day.
Drive. ABC Radio Perth.